Hello, everyone. I am Takara Elliott, recent Health Administration graduate and project coordinator for UMBC Public Health Week. Today, we are going to be talking about navigating the job process in the social sciences field. And I have Maya Pungsunka here with us today to give us some insight. Please introduce yourself, Maya.
Hey there, Takara. Thank you so much for having me. My name is, again, Maya Pungsunka, and I am a recent graduate of UMBC. I finished up my master's degree there in the Applied Sociology program, and I'm currently working full-time at the university as a research associate.
Okay, that sounds great. So today I'm just going to be asking Maya some lesser-known questions about navigating the job market in the social science field. So to begin, Maya, could you tell us a little bit about job searching as a social science major?
Yeah. So, So job searching as a social science major is very broad in the sense that, you know, the social science can encompass public health. It can encompass psychology, sociology, anthropology, health administration, etc. And so I would say that depending on your major, your track, your career pathway, there's a variety of jobs out there, rather it be doing social science type research, research and policy, whether it be health service delivery, rather it be managing a program. There are a variety of opportunities, occupations out there for anyone who is within the social science.
Sounds good. Now, a conversation that many students and even myself now as a recent grad, a big conversation that we see happening a lot is this talk about transferable skills, right? And they also talk about it a lot in the Career Center, especially since many college students, we may have one or two internships, but we don't have like extensive experience in the field we want to go into. So next, I want to talk about how to portray transferable skills when you apply for a job. How do you take the experiences that you've had and translate them into a professional job?
Yeah, that is a very good question. I think it's important to understand that of all the skills that we have, that, you know, understandably so, not all students are going to have already been in the job market. A handful of them may not have worked at all, or a handful of them may have worked, say, in some form of like customer service type work, rather that be in the fast food industry or in retail. Nonetheless, in all of these jobs, there are some skills that you are, as the individual, exhibiting to do these customer service type jobs, or even skills that it takes to just be a student. And those skills are very much transferable. I think the best thing is, as you are trying to navigate the job market and find jobs in these professional settings, is being able to sort of quantify the successes that you've had, rather it be in academia or rather it be in these customer service type jobs, right? So when you go into the job market, rather it be a job within the social science field or elsewhere, employers want to hear, well, what were some of your accomplishments? What were some of your successes? And you know, it's not enough to say, well, I did a project for a nonprofit organization regarding student security. Okay, well, that's great. Well, let's elaborate on that. And so the best way to say is, well, I was able to decrease food insecurity by X amount of percent because I did this type of work, right? Or let's say that I was able to sell X amount of units for this customer, or for this job. And so in such a way, what I'm trying to get at is that in order to truly sell the skills that you have, that, you know, that may not necessarily be in line with the job that you're going for, because we're all starting from different places in our lives, is to truly quantify the achievements and the experiences that you've had.
And I know from previous conversations that we've had before, you have not always been a full-time employee at UMBC. You know, I know both you and me, we both have retail experience because, you know, as students, you still have to find a way to provide for yourself. So Could you kind of elaborate more on how you began to build your professional niche, like starting from retail and like going to where you are now?
Oh my goodness. I think it's first important to recognize this is for anybody, and this is, something I wish I could have told myself when I entered the job market when I was much younger, is that navigating the job market is never going to be linear, right? You're never just going to immediately get the job you want. You're never just going to like get out of school and be in that field. And so to that point, people need to work to live. And so I worked in retail and I worked a retail job and I also babysat. But here's how I sort of like got into the professional setting. We won't talk about the niche just yet. We'll just talk about how I came into a professional job. Yes, part of that is because I went to college and that is a privilege of mine. But another part is I went from working in retail, a clothing store, and I found this, and I worked not just as like a sales associate, but I did work my way up into a management role, a semi-management role. And then ultimately there was a job posting that had asked, "We are looking for folks who have customer service experience that would like to work at a call center." Now, keep in mind, the call center that I worked at was, yes, it was my first professional job. And one of the reasons that I was able to have that as my first professional job was because of the customer service experience that I had in retail. So I transferred that into this call center job. And while I was working at this call center job, this first professional job, if you would say, it was still related to sales, but I was able to do some form of like business development, sales type work, right? And then ultimately, a new opportunity came up in the nonprofit world, which was to do business development. But this time, instead of doing business development for a call center for a private company, I can now do it for the nonprofit. And so I went that route. And so ultimately, what I'm saying is that each job that you have, or at least in my case, was a stepping stone toward another, to the dream job that you would want, that I would want, right? I know that I didn't really want to work in retail, but I worked in retail because I needed a job to pay bills. I knew that I didn't want to work in a call center, but I worked in a call center because it was an opening that called to the skills that I already had, and it was a professional job. And I know that I needed to be in a professional setting to have that experience to fully start that professional career. Likewise, the development role in this call center was able to be transferred to a development role in a nonprofit world, right? And then going from the nonprofit world, I sort of just like built my way up. And fortunately, having that nonprofit experience, but also having that overall professional experience is sort of what sold me into landing the jobs that I really cared for, that I was most passionate about. So that hopefully answers your question on how I was able to sort of build my, I guess you could say, professional steps. But to talk about professional niche, really what really interests me. To tell you the truth, when it comes to building my professional niche, I'm still figuring that out. Because I've only been in the world of research outside of academia, or I mean outside of my master's degree for like less than 6 months, and I'm still trying to figure out what exactly is my niche. Regardless, I am allowing my values to sort of guide what my professional interests are, especially within the policy and research sphere. Hopefully that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I really like how you admit, like, hey, I'm still figuring it out. I feel like a lot of students they have some trepidation about admitting that, but that's completely okay. Sometimes, like you said, with the stepping stone, sometimes the path kind of just unfolds itself. You know what I mean? And I like how the way you illustrate your story, you can see as you go from job to job, you kind of picked up certain tools that you needed for your toolkit to get you where you need
Absolutely.
to go.
I
So,
love that. Yeah.
no, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Of course.
So next, we just talked about transferable skills, which is something that you know, students probably have a hard time with. And another thing that I know students have a hard time with, including myself, is interviewing.
Oh,
so,
such dread.
Yes. So I want to ask you, what was the hardest part about interviewing and how did you overcome those challenges?
Okay. Yes. Okay. So interviewing, especially now in the time of COVID, mm-hmm. the most challenging thing about interviewing is that a handful of the interviews are via phone or via video conference, right? Mm-hmm. And this, phones are fine. Phones are a little bit easier because, you know, at least for me, I think it's personally a lot better to have a phone conversation than to have a video conversation because you're worried about what you look like. You're worried about, you know, you don't get to necessarily see the other person's facial expression and their mm-hmm. mannerisms, so it's hard to read body language. And I think the hardest part for me, especially interviewing for jobs, because I was interviewing for jobs this past May 2020 in the middle of a pandemic, was just being comfortable in front of a camera. And I noticed that because I was so uncomfortable in front of a camera, I was mm-hmm. unable to be my most authentic self. And so I came off really robotic. And I came off robotic because I was thinking about 5 million things that was happening in this interview. Did I look okay? Do they like me? Why aren't they smiling right now? Why aren't they laughing at my jokes right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had this fear of judgment. And I think ultimately how I was able to overcome that was twofold. One, to sort of highlight the job description. So whatever the job description was prior to going into the actual interview, I would go ahead and highlight what they were looking for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would sort of provide concrete examples for those job descriptions for what they were looking for. And I would share that with them. But also to really make myself feel comfortable in front of the camera, in front of the screen, in interviews in general, was just I had to go through so many interviews. And mm-hmm. I know that's probably not the answer that students want to hear. But honestly, that's the truth. As someone who was formerly a student, who was job searching, was I really only got better at doing interviews because I had to do 20 to 30 interviews
right.
in one summer, you know. And so that was really the hardest part about interviewing. Nonetheless, mm-hmm. preparing and practicing and highlighting the job descriptions and providing personal examples helped me to overcome those challenges.
Okay, that sounds good. And, you know, listening to this, I also don't want to hear that answer. You know, the way to get better at interviewing is interview.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the way to get better at interviewing is just to do more interviews. And that sounds awful because you want to be great at your first interview. I think also reconciling with the fact that your first interview is going to be awful, I think it's helpful because you're being mm-hmm. honest with yourself. And also because if you can't openly admit and, you know, accept that your first interview, regardless of what it'll be, is going to be awful, then you're going to have a really hard time going through the job process because you're always going to end up being awful to yourself. You know, you're going to end up being your worst critic. So
right.
at that point, after that first interview, acknowledge that it may not have been the greatest. For some folks, it's probably phenomenal, and I applaud them. I am not one of those people. But the first one isn't going to be the greatest, and that's okay. And the best that you can do is just acknowledge it for what it is and continue on.
Right, and always seeing those mistakes or their mess-ups as just opportunities to grow.
Absolutely.
You know, I think with interviews, at least for me, the reason why I'm so hard on myself when, you know, I feel like it didn't go well, or, you know, after you leave an interview, you know immediately you didn't get that job. Like, you just know.
Right.
I think the hardest part about that is making everything feel like a life or death decision. You know what I mean? Like, oh my gosh, if I don't get this job, like, that was my one opportunity. Putting so much pressure on yourself in these situations
yeah.
is just so unnecessary when instead you could just look at it as a game.
Exactly.
You know?
Or like a learning mm-hmm. experience.
Right. Right. You just use it as another tool in your toolkit.
Absolutely.
So speaking of getting better at practicing interviewing, what are some resources that students can use to learn how to interview and, you know, learn how to really sell themselves to employers?
Yeah, so if we are talking about students at UMBC, my understanding is that the Career Center has this free online resource called Big Interview. And Big Interview is, there are a list of questions that you could practice interviewing. There is sort of a person that can, that gives you a lecture on how to interview. They give you pointers. And so I say that if you are a student at UMBC, go ahead and use Big Interview through the Career Center. It is amazing. I used it for the majority of my interviews when I was job hunting, and I'm kind of really sad that I didn't know about it at the start of my job hunting time. I only really discovered in the middle of my job hunting time, but nonetheless, use Big Interview. Other than that, other resources that students can use is to practice interviewing with folks at the Career Center also, or practice interviewing with, you know, a friend or a family member and see if they can give you pointers. Also consider maybe going to somebody who has a job that you're really interested in, you know, particularly maybe not that exact job, but within that field, and sort of ask them how their experiences were when they were interviewing for the job for the very first time. So what I mean by that is, let's say that you're really into policy, you're really into research, and you are about to interview for, say, a research assistant or a research analyst role at whatever company. Perhaps going into your network and seeing, who else do I know that works within the research sphere, and let me reach out to them and ask, okay, what was the interview process like for you? How can I prepare? And what are folks looking for when for a person in this position? So I would say those are some of the resources that students can utilize for their big interview. Now, for students who are no longer students, because I do believe at some point you either cannot utilize the Career Center or you have to pay for it. Also looking at your state agency, right? So the Department of Labor Licensing and Regulation has what's called the Maryland's American Job Centers. It is a workforce development and an adult learning center. So you can also go to them for free resources as well too. And they'll have a handful of things that the Career Center provides. So those would be sort of the resources for students. Otherwise, just practice, practice, practice.
Now, talking about interviewing and kind of being in that limbo space between not having a job and searching and trying to get something to put food on the table, we're going to talk about navigating unemployment.
Ooh.
And this is a topic that I feel like is kind of the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
UMBC provides so many resources to build students' professional lives, but I feel like there hasn't been a conversation about actually being unemployed yet and how to deal with being in that space. So I want to ask you, what experiences do you have with navigating unemployment, and what advice would you give to students who are curious about the unemployment process?
Sure. So I've definitely been unemployed, and it was awful. The first time I was unemployed, I openly admit that I was let go from a job. And, you know, between me and the organization, it just didn't work out. And at the time, it was extremely hurtful. The second time I was unemployed was really because I had graduated, and I no longer could work for the university, and I was job hunting, and I was that one was a little bit different. So I have dealt with unemployment in sort of like two different spheres, one being let go and one where I'm in limbo, right? Because I just graduated and I'm waiting for somebody to hire me. I would say that first and foremost, find gratitude in being unemployed. And I know that sounds like, how can one person find gratitude while being unemployed? Being unemployed means that, well, yes, you don't have the income that you like. You have a handful of time. And so I say utilize that time wisely, right? So this could mean that while you are unemployed, your full-time job then becomes to search for a job. If you want to challenge yourself a little bit, or maybe you don't have the mental capacity to search for a job, thinking that you're, you know, quote unquote, full-time job, consider picking up a part-time job that, you know, pays the bill. Also keeping in mind that your part-time job isn't going to be your forever job, and that's okay. When I was unemployed the second time, I was unable to collect unemployment insurance because in the state of Maryland, if you have more than 3 jobs within 18 months, you cannot collect unemployment. And, you know, while I was in school, I kept picking up different part-time jobs, different contract full-time jobs. So by the end of grad school, when I was no longer a student and couldn't work for the university, I couldn't collect anything because I didn't fit the bill. I didn't qualify. And so what I did was I went back and I nannied, and I had to remind myself that my nannying job, though it was not in my field, was still paying the bills, and that's okay. And while I was doing that part-time, again, I was job searching for like almost 6 to 8 hours a day, because when you don't have a job, job searching then becomes your job.
Right.
Additionally, on the weekends, and again, this is if you have the means to, and if you have the mental and physical capacity for this, consider volunteering. I would then, so between job searching from 9 to 5 and nannying in the evening time, I would also volunteer on the weekends, because volunteering increases your chances of getting hired, as well as increases your network to connect with other folks within the field. So those are sort of how I navigated unemployment.
And do you have any words of encouragement that you could give to students who may be going through that process right now, especially like recent graduates?
Especially for recent graduates. I have so many words of encouragement, but I will start with this. You are not less of a person because you are not employed, right? You have this incredible degree. You put yourself through college. You've learned a handful of things that, you know, the average person may not know. But just because you are not employed does not make you less of a person. And also to keep in mind that we are in a pandemic right now. The job market is awful. It's highly, highly competitive, more so because certain places aren't hiring at all. There's a hiring freeze. And so also understanding that, again, this is, you being hired is truly no fault of your own when the economy isn't doing well.
Right.
Sort of keeping that in mind. But yeah, those would be the words of encouragement that I have for students who are dealing with unemployment immediately right after school.
Yeah, and I think that those words are really profound, because I feel like we all have a tendency to identify ourselves with our circumstances. Like, we think that our circumstances and things that happen outside of us, things that are out of our control, are an indicator of who we are as a person or our worth. So I just want to thank you for saying that.
Sure.
Because I know that is a huge theme, especially right now, and especially with things already being hard on people, you know, mentally, emotionally, because it is a pandemic and, you know, things are shut down on top of being unemployed. It's very, very difficult. So thank you for reminding students that where you are is not who you are.
Exactly.
So important. So that got a little heavy. So to kind of bring us back up, let's talk about some possibly lucrative employment opportunities, industries that are doing all right during the pandemic. So are there any industries you recommend social science majors to explore to kind of start their career process?
Sure. So I mentioned earlier in our interview about how I started out in the nonprofit sector, and I highly encourage social science students to essentially go into, not necessarily go into, but, you know, consider going into the nonprofit sector, because oftentimes what their research has found from when I was studying nonprofits is that the nonprofit sector happens to do better than the private sector during economic hardship. And so while I know oftentimes folks are hesitant to go into the nonprofit sector because it doesn't necessarily pay well, understandably so, keeping in mind that the nonprofit sector, they're providing a handful of service deliveries on behalf of government organizations, right? Sometimes these government organizations are contracting NGOs to do a handful of their services. And so it's one of the reasons why NGOs are, I don't necessarily want to use the word they are in business, but in some way or the other, they are better in business during financial hardships than, say, the private sector. So I would say that. Also, side note, I want to preface that I am not an expert by any means in the nonprofit industry. However, nonetheless, I do have some knowledge about this industry because of my certification in nonprofit studies.
Thank you for that disclaimer.
Yeah.
Yes. And to add on to that, we are both not professionals.
Yes.
You know, we're just two students talking about our experiences and kind of drudging up a conversation of, you know, questions that people might not ask, or maybe they forget to ask, maybe they're scared to ask. So we're just here to kind of put the discussion on the table. So are there any other industries that are doing all right during this time besides nonprofit, or kind of for social science fields, it's kind of like nonprofit is where it's at?
Yeah, so nonprofit is like is a sector, but not necessarily an industry. That's also something to keep in mind, is nonprofit is a sector, it's not an industry, because within this nonprofit sector, there are different industries like art administration, entertainment, education, research, healthcare, all that stuff. So again, keeping that in mind, the sector in itself is doing fairly better than the private sector during economic hardship. Now, industry-wise, where I would say social science folks should look into is healthcare, especially during COVID-19. My understanding when I was reading the Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS, it was said that in December alone, there were 39,000 additional healthcare jobs across all sectors, right? So that's private, nonprofit, and in government as well, too.
Right.
Now, additionally, according to the Center for Civil Society Studies by the Johns Hopkins Krieger School of Arts and Society, they had said that within the nonprofit sector, healthcare jobs had only dropped by 3.1%. since the start of the pandemic up until December 2020. So I say all this because, especially now that we are in a pandemic, there is a large need for folks to go into the healthcare field. You know, this, of course, is not just limited to those within the medical field, like nurses, doctors, but also you're looking at researchers too. You're looking at program officers, you're looking at healthcare policymakers. So I would highly, highly suggest that folks with social science degrees look within this industry, but also within this industry/sector too, since there will be more jobs.
So how could a student prepare themselves for the nonprofit industry? I know that you did mentioned volunteering earlier, so if you could, you know, elaborate more on that.
So I would highly suggest folks to volunteer for a nonprofit of their choosing. Again, this would not only allow you to build a connection with that nonprofit, but it also gives you that background of what it's like to work in the nonprofit. Big shout out if you could do some form of nonprofit administration work, because administration work in of itself is highly expensive, and this is able to cut costs by, you know, having nonprofits have volunteers instead of having to hire out folks to do administrative work. And plus, again, it's building on that professional job resume, right? But in addition to that, if students have the means to, also consider taking nonprofit courses. And the reason why I say that is because nonprofits in of itself operate differently than the private sector and than, say, the public government sector.
Right.
There are a lot of things that go into having a nonprofit operate that includes adhering to bylaws, state and federal regulations, you know, know what the stakeholders are. And so, again, if students have the means to go ahead and take courses on nonprofit management, on nonprofit studies, maybe consider also talking to folks who are already working within the nonprofit sector so that they could sort of get some background on what it is that's happening within this sector. But also, I highly suggest that for students who are interested in the sector, who may not have the means to volunteer or have the means to take a course, consider following trends related to nonprofits. So again, I had earlier mentioned the Center for Civil Society Studies by Johns Hopkins University. This is, and this is no way like me, like an advertisement on behalf of them. This is because I thoroughly and genuinely like going on their profile and seeing the research that they do. But right. CCSS does a handful of research and publication on nonprofits, the nonprofit economy, et cetera.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
And for our last segment, we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but our last segment is about maintaining confidence and a sense of self-esteem or self-worth during the job process. So is there any other advice you could give to students who are feeling discouraged about their professional lives?
Yes. So to that, I say each person beats to the sound of their own drum, right? Each person is on there. Everyone's on different timelines, and that is absolutely okay. Again, I mentioned how there are going to be folks who, once they get out of college, they have a job immediately. For others, it's a little bit harder. The best thing to do is not compare your situation to the situation of somebody else, because one, you don't know what they're going through, and two, you're already going through a lot. So the criticism that you have for yourself, like, if you can't, throw it out the window, because you don't need that right now. And I say that you don't need that right now while you're navigating the job market is because if you hold that criticism highly when it shouldn't be held highly, then you become resentful of navigating the job market. It becomes that much more challenging. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I would say, right? But again, then navigating the job market, it's not linear, and that's fine. Going back to the conversation, whatever your first job is, it may not be your dream job, but that's okay because you will get there. You will get there, right? You've worked hard to get to this point, and you will get to other points in your life as well, too. You will get there. Those are sort of like the points that I have for students who are navigating the job market now. But I will say this, for students who are going really far ahead into the interview process, and let's say they're coming close to getting the job they want, also keeping in mind that, yeah, these interviews, they're daunting. But you are interviewing the employer just as much as they are interviewing you, right? So that, and I say that because there are going to be really bad companies that you work for. There are going to be very bad bosses that you work for. And the best way to avoid having to go through that, right, having to experience that, is asking the tough questions, asking the person who's interviewing you, so please tell me, what is your management style? Or, hey, when we are in a tight timeline, what are you doing for your employees to feel a little less stressed, right? Like, how are you implementing work-life balance into your company culture? What tools are you providing for your employees to be successful at what they're doing, right? So that is also another advice that I can give students as well, too.
Yeah, and I feel like that advice is so essential, and it's something you don't really hear a lot. Like, I can admit that during the interview process, not only is it daunting, but you start feeling a little disempowered.
Yeah.
Because you feel like, oh, like every time I talk to an employer, I have to mold myself so that they like me, so that I can get this job. And it's like, no, like that tips the scale so that they have all the power, where you're just as important too, because you're the one making the money. So
exactly.
It's very important for you to ask questions, you know, about the culture, about management style, about you know, how people get along in the company. All of these questions are very, very important. And when you ask those questions, you will feel more confident because you will feel like you can use your own voice and you feel like you have some control over your situation. So I love that you brought that up. That is so vital.
Absolutely.
What tools did you use to build or maintain your confidence through your process?
The tools that I use, aside from the tools that I had already mentioned, say the Career Center, the American Jobs Work Center, Speak Interview, besides those tools, again, it really for me was just having to go through so many interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, just getting better at that. I think also speaking words of affirmation to myself after each interview also helped me start to accumulate confidence in my next one.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like I mentioned, when you are your own worst critic, when you are beating yourself up for something that, you know, had happened within the interview process, within the job process, all of that stuff, you become resentful towards this. And so I think speaking words of affirmation helped so
mm-hmm.
that I became less resentful and more confident in the work that I do. Once again, highlighting the job descriptions and providing concrete, quantifiable examples also helped too. To prepare for the interview, I practiced constantly for the interview process. I was researching what potential questions employers were asking in positions and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I sort of built my confidence, and also just talking to other people who are going through it too, because it makes you feel a little less lonely that you're navigating the job market.
And as I'm currently navigating being unemployed. And one thing that has been really helpful for me is staying off of social media.
Yeah, so true.
That has been a big one. I have had a huge Instagram detox, a huge Twitter detox, even a LinkedIn detox. Because, you know, every second on LinkedIn you're seeing, congratulate this person on getting this new promotion. And it, you know, you can start getting a little salty about that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, yes, definitely social media detox, because the way that those things are designed, you just knee-jerk reaction, compare yourself to people.
100%. You know, since you're mentioning all this, I think there's an important thing that most job centers, like career centers, don't really talk about is there's such a huge focus on, like, getting the job. There's such a huge focus on being your productivity, right? I mean,
right.
Granted, and I'm going to get a little sociological here, but we live in a capitalist society, and so, of course, getting the job, getting the salary, getting the benefits, all that, it's so entirely in your face. I don't necessarily think that there are many resources out there that talk about mental health while navigating the job market. And I truly believe that, you know, yes, there are ways to get that interview. There are ways to get that phone call back. There are ways to negotiate your pay and all that. But we don't really talk about the mental health aspect, the energy that it takes to go find a job, to apply for the job, right? And I think
mm-hmm.
that is something that most career centers need to acknowledge, because going through this is not easy. And I think that's the biggest issue that I faced wasn't that, you know, I did terribly at an interview, because over time I got better at it. It wasn't because I put in a resume with a misspelling, because over time I had somebody else check it and it was perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, you're going to find the resources to really build up the resume, build up the interview, build up whatever it is that you need to be build up professionally. But no one truly talks about the mental health aspect of building yourself professionally.
And that's a very important aspect, because you go in really hopeful. Leading up to graduation, I was very, very, very hopeful. And then it's like right after you graduate, you start to get this feeling of like, wait a minute, nobody told me about this.
Right.
it's always kind of presented, the job process is always presented as a linear process.
Exactly.
And it is so not.
Yes. So true. It's not linear. And I wish that folks would stop preaching this, because then it would make, you know, students like us who are navigating this job market ought to be less resentful of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I think that navigating your mental health and having resources for that, I feel like that is such a great idea as far as, like, the Career Center or any other career resources are involved. Like, there should definitely be a mental health tab inserted.
Yes.
You know.
100%.
So, Maya, thank you so much for your wisdom, your insight, and your encouragement for students. This was such an enlightening conversation. I feel like we touched on a lot of important topics that students may really need to hear. And I feel like we also, you know, put some things into perspective, which is my goal with all of this. Did you want to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say thank you for having me be a part of this podcast, this interview. Should you ever want to have another conversation about the job market, but also about, like, mental health as it relates to professional growth, I am 100% all in.
Thank you so much, Maya. And before we go, did you want to share where students can find you on, like, any of your social media, LinkedIn, anything like that?
Yeah, sure. I would say go ahead and follow me on LinkedIn. It is, I don't know how the LinkedIn URL is set up. I think it's like, what, linkedin.com/, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be M Punk Sunka. Should I spell that out?
You know what? I think when I post this, I'll just put the links below.
Okay. Yeah. Then, yeah, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I do hope to have other social media pages up, but unfortunately, I am not a social media person.
Mm-hmm.
Folks could also search me on Twitter. So Twitter and LinkedIn, go ahead and do that. It's going to be mpunksunka. That's my handle. And follow me there.
And to learn more about UMBC Public Health Week and how to get involved with us, follow us on Instagram at UMBC Public Health Week and join our My UMBC page, which is also under the same name. So thank you guys for listening, and we hope you all stay safe and healthy. Bye.
Bye.